Lecture 28, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, Faust, Part 1.
In our last lecture, we discussed the theme of love, spiritual love and carnal love, and looked at the great book, De Mort d'Arthur, of Sir Thomas Malory, that great embodiment of the ideals of the Middle Ages that came out after the death of Malory in 1471. Edited and brought to fruition by the very interesting figure of William Caxton, who was the first major figure in English publishing. Now, the theme of love is, I think, crucial to any discussion of great books and great themes. We have talked about how love is a power that rules our own everyday affairs. And early Greek thinkers believed that the world was brought into being by the force of love. And Dante concludes his magnificent Divine Comedy by referring to the love that moves the universe. And love has power, power in our daily lives. We learn that from Sir Thomas Malory, but perhaps we also learn, because I always think you should take these great books, ponder the great themes that they raise, but also relate them to your own life. What is the story of Lancelot and Guinevere really about? Didn't Lancelot allow his love for Guinevere, which he did not choose? We very frequently don't choose the people we love, isn't that right? We don't know why we love them. But he loved Guinevere and she loved him. But that allowed him to be distracted from what was his great goal of life, which was the Holy Grail. In our own lives, I think we should from time to time ponder, are we pursuing something that really doesn't matter in the long run and may even be bad for us, and letting slip our great, unique mission in life? That's what happened to Lancelot. And with it, the theme of redemption. He made all of these bad mistakes, but he died redeemed. But in the meanwhile, England had been destroyed, and Arthur's Camelot had passed away. Love is also our theme in our next great book, Goethe's Faust, the Faust by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Now, it is truly a great book. It takes its place right there with the Iliad, the Aeneid, the Divine Comedy. And Goethe, like Shakespeare for the English and like Dante for the Italians, the Germans set apart from all the other mighty figures in their literary history. He is truly a genius, a universal genius. Goethe, who lived between 1749 and 1832, in other words, he was both the embodiment of the age of the Enlightenment and of the Romantic Age that came in the wake of the French Revolution, a long and distinguished life, such as few of us can ever hope to attain. He was very well educated. He came from reasonable circumstances, very well educated, fluent early on in Greek and Latin, and he imbibed that love and admiration for the classics that was a hallmark of the Age of the Enlightenment, the 18th century, the age in which Europe felt that it was freeing itself from the shackles of the wars of religion, freeing itself from the shackles of the Middle Ages, in which the human mind, reason alone, should decide matters. Man was a rational creature, and by employing that reason, man and woman, they could always move upward. It was an age that believed in progress, and that the world was better in the 18th century than it had ever been before. That there was more freedom in the 18th century than there had ever been before. It was an age of enlightened despots, like Maria Theresa of Austria, or like King George of England wanted to be, who believed that the well-intentioned absolute ruler could do the greatest benefits for their freedom, for their subjects, and ensure true freedom, that is, the freedom of the individual to live as they choose. The age of the Enlightenment is embodied in our Constitution, which is a rational document. And it does not mention God. And for many of the thinkers of the Enlightenment, God had made the world, wound it up like a clock, and then stepped back from it. And men and women made their own destiny. And Goethe was educated in this age of the Enlightenment and became its supreme representative. Early on, he went into the service of the Duke at Weimar, one of the many local potentates, the principalities of Germany. Germany in those days was divided, it was said, into 365 little principalities, one for each day of the year. And at Weimar, Goethe became a very notable, influential civil servant. In fact, he was really the ruler of Weimar, the Duke doing about everything he told him to do. And so he had a very busy everyday life, looking into the economic resources of the dukedom, looking into all matters of military questions. At the same time, he was a scientist, and a scientist who was universally admired in Europe, making very original researches for the time into the theory of color. He was a traveler, and his prestige allowed him to travel in grandeur and write observations, for example, on Italy. And a poet of supreme lyrical ability, and a playwright. And he came to be admired as no intellectual was in Europe of the day, and it was an age that admired intellectuals. It was the age of Montesquieu and Diderot, very great age. And he was the supreme intellectual of the time, and people came from all over just to say that they had talked with Goethe. And all through his life, he grappled with one theme, probably from the time he was a boy. He had seen in the marketplaces what we would call Punch and Judy shows, little puppets, of Dr. Faust, Dr. Faustus. And he was a real person, Dr. Faust. He had lived in Germany of the time of Martin Luther, probably between 1480 and 1540, and he had achieved an enormous reputation as a man not just of wisdom, but of magical wisdom. And the story grew that Faust was so smart and so knowledgeable and learned so much because he had sold his soul to the devil to acquire knowledge. So you would see, as you were walking along with your mother and father, eating little rolls and things, the devil come out and have a big fight with Faust there on the puppet stage. But it was an engaging theme, because it was also about ambition, was it not? And the desire for knowledge and wisdom. And the supreme ambition of Faust had been to know everything. The English playwright, great, great ability, Marlowe, wrote a tragedy on Faust. And Goethe kept coming back to this theme because he was a man who really wanted to know everything and seemed to have every success in life. And in 1808, he brought out the first part of his Faust that he had been long working on, the first part of the tragedy of Faust. And we will discuss this work of genius in two lectures. Part one, the Faust. And then we would devote a second lecture to part two. Second part was not published until 1831. And as any genius, we can trace the marvelous spiritual and mental progress of Goethe. But in 1808, the first part of Faust was brought out. And it really begins, like the book of Job, in heaven, with God and the devil walking back and forth. Now, the devil here is not a cloven-hoofed monster, though he can be, but he is a very erudite man of the world. Picture him in his knee breeches and wig, walking up and down with God, to whom he pays great reverence. You know, I continue to look out on the human race that you created, and they're a pitiful bunch. They're like a bunch of grasshoppers to me, hopping all around, never getting anywhere. No, no, says God, you misunderstand them. See the civilized conversation between absolute good and absolute evil. No, you misunderstand them. Men want to achieve. And as long as men and women are striving, as long as they are trying to do something, they'll make mistakes. But the striving is what is important. That's why I've given them free will. Ah, yes, free will. What does that really amount to? Do you really give them free will? I do. They can make any choice they want. Do you know Faust? Dr. Faustus, says the devil. Well, yes, I do. Very learned man. He is. Why don't you go and see him? If there were one human I would want you to get to know something about, it's Faust. Can I do anything I want to with Faust? Of course you can. Could I have his soul if he agreed to give it to me? Well, yes. Yes, if he agreed to give it to you. He's got free will. Thank you so much. Next scene, then, is Faust in his chamber. Now, he's a professor. A professor of great repute. His father has been a very distinguished doctor of medicine. And Faust is learned in all range of subjects. Theology, medicine, law, in Greek and Latin, all of these he has studied. He has in his study there, picture a Gothic chamber. Picture a table scattered with scientific apparatus like a, you know, retort and things lying around. And a skull. There's Faust, all alone, dressed in his scholar's garb. And once I was honored to be at the 900th anniversary of the University of Bologna. And I was representing my university, but there were rectors, you know, presidents from universities all over Europe. And the rector of the University of Leipzig looked like a magician. He had this big high-pointed hat, this long flowing robe with stars on it, and this huge necklace around him. That was their medieval garb. And so that's how Faust would have been dressed, as a wise man. He's sitting there thinking to himself, and just to give you a touch of the original. Ach, habe ich nun Philosophie, Juristerei und Medizin durch ausstudiert mit Heizen bemühen und stehe ich hier, ich arme Tor und weiß so viel als wie zuvor. Heiße Magister, Doktor Gar und Sie an den Zehnen Jahr, hier auf der Abend, quern krüm, meine Schüler an der Nase herum und weiß, dass wir nix wissen können. Das will mich hier das Herz verbrennen. You know, here I am. I have studied philosophy. I have studied law. I have studied medicine. I've even studied theology. I have for 10 years been a teacher. I have pulled my students around by their nose, trying to get them to learn, you know, pointing out that one corner and trying to get them to see the other three corners. And I'm going to tell you one thing. All I have learned is that we cannot learn anything. We don't know anything. And that is just eating me out. It's just gnawing at me. I would give anything for true wisdom. Suddenly there's a knock on the door. Sir, oh my gosh, it's my research assistant. What do you want, Wagner? Sir, I heard you in here speaking late at night. I thought you were reciting a Greek tragedy. I so want to read Greek tragedies with you. Well, maybe I was reading a comedy. Ooh, I'd like to read comedies too. I understand that even a preacher can learn from a comedian, if the preacher himself is a comedian, perhaps. Oh, sir, please let me study more with you. I know a lot already, says Wagner, the research assistant. I want to know everything. Ah, don't we all? Well, we will. We will. We'll read that tragedy together. But right now, please, I have some things to do. Please excuse me. All right. But you will be back in touch to read the Greek tragedy. Of course I will. Of course I will. Ah, never can I even have 5 minutes of thought. Ah, I'm going to read the Bible. Look at this. I open the Bible. Now, in the beginning was the Word. The Word? What could a word do? How could in the beginning be the Word? In the beginning was the... How about the deed? No, not quite. In the beginning was the act. In the beginning was the act. That is what it is. In the beginning was the act. But now, I know so much and yet know nothing. The only act that can give any meaning to me now is just to kill myself. That's what I'm going to do. Oh, skull over there, speak to me. I'm going to join you soon. Look, there's Daddy's, all of his medicines and all of his the bags of instruments he had. People respected my father. And he knew where he was in life and what he wanted to do and that he was doing good. I'm doing nothing. I'm going to have a drink of poison. And now, oh, you golden liquid. How glorious you seem to me. Soon it will all be past, just to drink you now. Dong, 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 the bells began to ring out. Christos Aneste, Christ is risen. Ah, it's Easter. It's Easter right now, says Faust. Easter. Why do those bells? Why does that chanting that Christ is arisen? Why does that mean anything to me? I'm too wise to take any of that seriously. But it does. It does. Well, perhaps I'll put off taking this poison. I can always drink it tomorrow. I'll put it off. The next day, to clear his mind, he goes out for a walk, and he feels obligated to Wagner, the research assistant, to talk to him. And they're walking along. Wagner's just, you know, talking. You're so lucky to be a professor and a full professor at such a young age. How happy. I mean, you've reached your heart's desire. Yes, yes, I have. And look how all the people step back and take off their hats. Herr Doctor, Herr Professor Doctor, what a wonderful thing that must be. Oh, yeah, it's just great, you know. Herr Professor Doctor, not only are you a great man, but your father was a great man. He cured me. Oh, thank you very much. Isn't that wonderful that people remember your dad? No, it doesn't. He's just a typical doctor. He probably killed about as many as he cured. You seem so angry. Well, no, I'm not angry. I'm just telling you how. Look at those boys and girls over there frolicking. They're having such a good time. Gosh, I wish I had that kind of innocence. Well, come on, Wagner, let's go back. What is that creature over there, Wagner? That dog? Yes. Interesting creature, isn't it, Wagner? I don't know, just looks like a poodle looking for its master. No. Look, it's coming up to me. Hello, old boy. Let's take it home. You don't want that poodle? Yes, I do, Wagner. Bring him on with us. All right. There's Faust back in his chamber again, pondering all his problems, and suddenly that poodle begins to grow. And grow and grow and get bigger. What's going on with that poodle, says Faust. It's all there by himself, you know, by himself there. And suddenly that poodle is no longer a poodle, but another scholar, a traveling scholar. Arrayed in his scholarly garb. Who are you, sir? I do not know you. I am the devil. I don't believe in the devil, but I am. Well, the devil's supposed to have a tail and horns, I know, but if I'm the devil, can I assume any form I want? Well, I guess you can. What are you doing in here? You invited me in. Well, no, I said the poodle. Come on in, boy. Well, that's me. What do you want with me? It's what you want with me. Didn't you say you wanted some meaning to your life? Yeah. Didn't you say you were willing to do anything to have the wisdom about life? Yes. What do you want to do with life? Asked the devil. I want to live for a change. I don't want to study and be tied up with books. You know, here I am in middle age, and I have never had a romantic fling, for example, and I'm poor. You want money? Oh, I want so much money. All right. You want girls? Oh, yeah, not just girls, but lascivious girls. Oh, okay. What are you willing to do for that? Oh. What do you expect? Can I have your soul? My soul? Sure, my soul, huh? You know, you didn't take the devil seriously. He's here. Maybe you should take your soul seriously. I'm giving you the disclaimer here, don't you see? You may have a soul, and I may claim it for all eternity. I'm willing. You're willing? Yes. Then sign this document. Document? Sure. We're going to handle these matters in a business-like fashion, but you're the devil. Look, business is business. We're making a contract here. I give you everything you want, and then I get your soul. Done. Ink won't do. Blood. Blood, yes. I know. Very expensive commodity. Your soul, the blood. All right. Now. Well, let's get on. Let's get on with this new life you want to live. All right, I'm ready. Oh, gosh, it's office hours. I forgot all about it. Oh, look, there's a student out there. Oh, why don't you go in and get ready for a night on the town, and I'll talk to the student. Suddenly he assumes the form of Faust. Come in, boy. What can I do for you? Oh, I need some advice on my career planning. Sure, what do you want? I don't know what I want to do in life. Maybe I'd like to study philosophy. Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of things you have to learn in general education that really won't mean anything to you. Yeah, yeah. What would you recommend, doctor? Oh, I would recommend you become a doctor, perhaps. A doctor? Yes, you get to see girls in the nude, you know, and nobody can do a thing about it. Sir! Well, you asked me what you should do. Well, that doesn't seem proper advice, but I'll ponder it. Good boy. Sir, I've got your textbook here. Would you sign it?
Sure. E riti sicut Deus, scientes bonum et malum. You will be like God. You will know good and evil.
Thank you, sir.
Fine. Come back any time. Well, now, got your students out of the way. Let's roll. Off they go to a wine cellar. And there are students drinking the way Faust had always wanted to do when he was being a studious undergraduate and graduate student. And they start drinking, and then they join Faust and the devil. And the devil looks just like any other wandering scholar. And they begin to drink and drink, and suddenly the devil turns their wine into fire.
Ah! They're burning!
Ah, that's what I call fun and pranks. Did you ever get to do that when you were just a student, doctor?
No, I didn't.
Well, here, doctor, here we are. They're coming after us now. We'll get out, and they ride away on a wine barrel.
Oh, that was marvelous.
Yeah, it was pretty good fun, wasn't it? Well, now, doctor, so you've seen a little bit of the wild side of life. What would you like to do now?
I want a girl.
You want a girl?
Yes, I want to feel true love, deep love inside me.
I want a girl, a woman, really to love me.
And I found the one.
You have?
Yes, today I was walking the streets.
I knew I shouldn't let you out of my sight. Who did you see?
Oh, no. She's a young, fair, wonderful creature. And I saw her in going to church. Her name is Margaret.
Or the German short name is Gretchen.
Oh, I think I know the woman you mean. Now, she's not for you. She's a really nice girl. She's got a mother she helps take care of. Her brother, I think, is off in the army.
No.
You don't want her. I thought you said you wanted a lascivious woman.
No.
I've changed my mind. She's so beautiful.
All right, if that's the one you want, I'll help you get her. But we've got to step-by-step seduce her, don't you see?
But you said she was a good girl.
No girl is good.
No man is good.
Let's just check a bit. Tell you what. See these jewels?
Yes.
I'm going to put them in her room, and she'll discover them. Now, you approached her on the street, right?
I came up and tried to walk her home, and she wouldn't have anything to do with me.
But she knows you're interested, doesn't she?
Yes.
We'll put them in there, and her immediate assumption will be that you, this, quote, unwanted suitor, have given them to her. And sure enough, Gretchen, Margaret, comes into her room that evening, and there are these jewels.
How in the world these jewels get there? We're very, poor people. He's magnificent.
Ooh, I wonder if it could have been that man, that very handsome traveling scholar, that man of the world who came up to me on the street.
What should I do with the jewels? Well, you know what you should do with the jewels. You should take them to your mother and tell her.
Mom will take them away from me. I know. She's very strict. I'll go next door to Auntie Martha, the old lady that you know. She's got a way for the world. Auntie Martha, what do I do with these jewels?
You keep them.
You keep them?
But wouldn't that be wrong? Why? You didn't steal them? Keep them.
See, she's already taken that little step, not telling her mother, keeping the jewels. Then there's a rap at the door.
Sir, may I help you?
Yes, madam. I am a wandering scholar. I have just come from Italy to bring you some news.
Good news or bad news?
Well, pretty bad. Your husband's dead.
Oh, my husband's dead. This is to Aunt Martha.
Yes.
Yes, he's died. I was with him when he died. They buried him in Padua near St. Francis.
Oh, did he leave me any money?
No, he didn't. In fact, he spent it all on a prostitute in Naples. But nonetheless, he said, bear you well.
Is that all he said?
No, he said you were the cause of his running away from home.
What?
Yes, you hounded him all the time. You nagged him all the time. He could never, he'd go out and have to work all day to bring home money for you and the kids. And then they just fought and quarreled all the time. So he just ran away, took up with his prostitute in Naples. And that's that. That was his message to you.
Oh, well, that's so sad.
May I give you supper? You're a handsome man of the world.
Well, thank you, Martha. May I call you that?
Meanwhile, Faust is there with him.
And Gretchen is there. And Faust says, young lady, would you accompany me out in the garden? And he begins to get to know her. And day by day, he comes back and calls and comes back and calls again and again and again. And one day they're walking in the garden, Faust and Gretchen, this beautiful, innocent young thing, and they're walking along, and she says, I just don't see why you keep coming and paying visits to me. You're such a worldly man. Handsome, debonair, you've seen the world, huh? But never I've seen anything as fair as you.
Oh, ooh, ooh.
And then she picks a little daisy, takes a flower. He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me. He loves me. He loves me.
I do.
But we got to do something about it, Gretchen. What do you mean? Well, if we love each other, surely we want to take that next step. Oh, well, I don't know. I can't wait for marriage. I must have you now. But my mother won't approve. Oh, you know what I've got right here? I know, but my mother sits outside the door every night. She's worried about you. You see this little medicine here? It's just like a sleeping tablet. Your mom will just take a good snooze, and then we can be together. And they do. But the sleeping potion has been prepared by the devil, and it's deadly. And so now the mother dies. Well, Gretchen didn't know it was poison, but she gave it to her mother in order to commit a sin, didn't she? So step by step, keeping something that wasn't hers, lying to her mother by implication, and now she's killed her mother. And now she's deep into the romance with Faust. And one night her brother is home on leave, and he comes storming down the street in the dark evening, swearing and ranting. I can't believe I go into a pub to have a drink, and suddenly all my old friends are snickering about my sister, that she's running around with all these guys. I don't believe it. My sister was always fair, and I'm going to prove it. I'm going on right now and see what she's doing. Now that Mom's gone, who can take care of her? And suddenly, as he comes down the street, he sees both Faust and the devil coming out of the window. Two of them! I can't stand it! So he leaps upon him with his swords, and they start flashing back and forth, and the devil runs him through. Her brother Valentine has now been killed. Let's go, doctor! Come on, says the devil. Faust says, I can't leave her alone! I can't leave her alone. She's told me she's going to have a baby. Doctor, are you going to stay here and go to jail? Are you coming with me? All right, I'll come with you. And so off goes Faust. And then word comes. While Faust has been with the devil, celebrating a wild revel on the mountains, in the Harz mountain region of Germany, on the devil's night, cavorting with all manner of devil women, the lovely Gretchen has been arrested and put into prison on charges of murdering not only her mother, but her baby. And Faust says, I must go back and see her. Why, doctor? She's done for. They're going to put her to death. You'll just get into trouble. Don't you understand? I have a responsibility to that girl. What responsibility? I seduced her and I've abandoned her. So what? You wanted to see life. That's what life is about. Now, I thought you wanted to go on and see even bigger things. You're going to let yourself be caught up in some little romance and cost it your life? I'm going back for her. I'm going to do my duty, aren't you? Back he goes and enters the jail cell. And Gretchen now, with all that has happened to her, has become unhinged. Did you really kill our baby? The poor little thing. I didn't know what to do. I put him in a spring. I put him in a stream. He died. I didn't know what to do. Why did you leave me? You killed the poor innocent baby? I did. I killed my mother. I gave her that medicine you gave me. Why did you leave me? Why weren't you here to stay with me? Take care of me. I'm sorry. I'll try to take care of you now. What can you do? The jailer's coming right now. They're going to execute me now for murder. I'll stay with you. There's the jailer coming down. You hear his footsteps, and you hear the footsteps of the priest and the other executioners who are coming to get you. And the devil says to Faust, Doctor, what are you going to do? I'm going to stay here and explain. Explain what? That you're an accessory to the murder of her mother? Explain that you're an accessory to the murder of the baby? That's death. Are you going to say that you killed her brother in a duel when he was just defending her honor? But that's how it will look. You're guilty of murder. They're going to put you to death. What are you going to tell them? The devil made me do it? Ha! Bye-bye, doctor. I'm out of here. No. Oh, and by the way, here's that document. As soon as they put you to death, I got your soul for all eternity. You remember you signed it? Oh, I signed it, didn't I? Oh, yeah, and I'm collected. Oh, you know, you're going to your death with mortal sins upon you. You're doomed for all eternity, Herr Doktor. Coming with me? Heinrich, that is the name Gretchen knows him by. Heinrich, you won't leave me, will you? Why are you talking like that? Coming, doctor. Heinrich, don't leave me. Doctor, here I come. Off they go. And the executioner comes for Gretchen. And she dies. That is how the first part ends of our tragedy of Dr. Faust.